I know, I have like a pit in my stomach. This is horrible.
Are you in yet? Morning.
Morning.
Okay, good morning, everyone. Shall we say the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We have a roll call, please.
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Nguyen? Director Zara?
Yes.
Director Brandman?
Here.
Director Ta?
Here.
Director Sheldon? Director Yeo? Director Rowe?
Here.
Director Bilodeau? Director Sarmiento?
Here.
You do have a quorum.
Okay. Do we have any items received too late to be agendized?
There are none.
All right. Do we have any visitors who would like to speak? I don't see anything. Okay. Moving on to the consent calendar. Do we have a motion for the consent calendar?
So moved by Brandman.
Second.
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Zara?
Yes.
Director Brandman?
Aye.
Director Ta?
Yes, I just want to abstain on a minute and approve the rest of the item. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And Director Rowe?
Yes.
That motion carries with 5 yes votes.
Okay. For some reason I am having, okay, items. Item 11, issuance of an agreement to engineering.
Yes.
For the analytics for the NCP consulting services for South Basin.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I believe Roy Herndon is going to present on this item.
Yes, thank you. I think I will be sharing my screen. See if I can do that. Here we go. All right. Boom. Sure, I get that bigger.
Roy, while you're doing that, Madam Chair, I've been here. I've been unable to unmute.
Okay.
So Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I heard you, Director Sheldon. Well, good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. We're here to request authorization to issue a consulting services agreement to the firm known as Engineering Analytics. This is to continue the work for the South Basin Remedial Investigation and Feasibility Study that we've been performing and working on for the last several years. The firm that we had been using, Hargis & Associates, had a number of the key staff, basically almost all of the key staff, left the firm of Hargis and Associates and moved to engineering analytics in the last couple of months. So that's, we're requesting moving our work to the firm where those staff went, because they are the people that have been doing an excellent job on the work so far. So let me give you an update of where we are on the South Basin remedial investigation and feasibility study. Just recently, we completed the RI report, the remedial investigation report, and that was a very extensive, very comprehensive report that essentially culminated analysis of all of the data collection and data analysis of the whole South Basin area. And that included over 50 sites where releases of contaminants occurred. So we call those source sites. Also, over 500 monitoring wells were analyzed. These are not wells that all of the wells that OCWD drilled. These are both OCWD constructed monitoring wells as well as wells constructed by the responsible parties. So quite a bit of data looked at and evaluated and interpreted over a large area. The consultant, in this case, this work was done by Hargis and Associates when the staff were there. This was the work that Hargis did. And they updated the plume map. This is the first time the plume map has been updated since 2013. And the footprint, I'll say, is about the same. Not a big surprise. The contaminants didn't disappear by themselves. and so we still have a plume that's about 2 miles long and about a mile wide. And it's a series of commingled plumes from the different source sites that have then commingled with each other and formed one large plume. And the concentrations are, in some cases, hundreds of times the drinking water standard. The plume is mostly in the shallow aquifer, and I'll get to more of that in a minute. But the work that was done was with the RI report. It went through various drafts and then review by the Regional Water Quality Control Board and the State Water Resources Control Board. So we had a lot of back and forth discussion, a lot of good discussion with the agencies. And we believe we've addressed their comments, and we provided our responses to their comments in the report. So you can see what the comments were and how the comments were responded to. So we're happy to have reached this milestone in the project. Some of the conclusions, the key conclusions of the RI, the remedial investigation, are that volatile organic compounds, or VOCs, and other chemicals from numerous sites have impacted the shallow aquifer, as I mentioned. And when I say shallow aquifer, I'm talking about essentially in this area, the upper 100 feet below ground surface. We're not seeing, except with few exceptions, we're not seeing contaminants getting past about 100 feet below ground surface. That's actually great news, because that means it will be easier for remediation to occur if we don't have to clean up hundreds of feet of aquifer, and we get to just focus on the upper 100 feet. Now, the exception, which is an important exception, of where we're seeing contaminants that have gotten deeper are at IRWD well number 3. Irvine Ranch Water District has a well right in the middle of the plume. And that well is a very, very deep well. It goes down to 1,300 feet and doesn't even have a screen. Atop of its screen is about 480 feet, so very deep. However, that well has shown detections of these chemicals. So it has had detections of things like TCE and PCE and perchlorate in the past over the MCL. In recent years, the concentrations have been very low, like one part per billion, so below the MCL. However, the fact is still remains that these contaminants are finding a way to be detected in a well that's screened very, very deep in the drinking water aquifer. So We don't know the mechanism of how these contaminants have gotten down into that well, but we think rather than just hope that this won't continue to occur, it makes sense to address the contamination in the shallow aquifer and so that we reduce the threat. So the report concluded that the threat to drinking water aquifers, potable supply aquifers, continues for as long as the spread of the plume is unabated. So if we can keep the shallow plume from spreading further and beginning to shrink that plume, we reduce the threat that these contaminants can find their way down into the drinking water aquifer. So let's see where we are now in the overall process, what we call the RIFS process. We've completed the RI. We finished the remedial investigation. So the red arrow shows you where we are right now. So we finished that key milestone. The next key step in the process is to perform the feasibility study. This is where we look at remedial alternatives to clean up the plume and keep it from spreading. And so they look, the consultant will be looking at different technology options. They'll look at, they'll perform groundwater flow modeling to figure out what kinds of facilities such as extraction wells or other remedial techniques can be used to keep the plumes from spreading further and begin to contain them and keep them from migrating deeper or laterally. So this is approximately a year's worth of work. We estimate June 2021 to complete the feasibility study and prepare the feasibility study report. That will again go through regulatory review and also the stakeholders. This would be the public and interested parties will have an opportunity to comment on the feasibility study. And so that's part of the process. After that's completed, the next step is to look at the different alternatives and see which ones rise to the top. And is there one in particular that seems to have the best overall ranking in terms of things like overall protectiveness of human health? Does it comply with regulatory standards like drinking water standards? Is it implementable? Is it feasible to build? And is it effective both in the short run and in the long run? Those are some of the specific criteria that are used to evaluate the remedial alternatives. Based on that, staff will present to the board what we call a proposed remedial action plan. And that will then be up to the board to decide if they approve that plan to move forward with, that's basically the proposed project to address the contamination. And so at that point, then the board would approve it, they would select the remedy, and we would move on into design and construction. So that's the process looking forward. Are there any questions at this point before I move on? Okay, I'll keep going. Just a couple more slides. This slide provides the scope of work for engineering analytics to continue and essentially complete that process that I just showed you. So the key scope items are shown here with the costs on the right for each one of those items. One of the last things that we need to do on the RI report is to submit it for stakeholder comments. This is something that that is part of our Prop 1 obligation is to submit the RI report for comments. We've already had the regulatory agencies review it, but we want to make sure the stakeholders have an opportunity to ask questions and provide comments. So we'll be doing that hopefully in the next month. So that's the last task of the RI that needs to be finished. Then we move into the feasibility study, as I mentioned, and the next four items on this scope here are all part of the feasibility study. The groundwater modeling, the development and screening of the remedial alternatives, and then evaluating and comparing those remedial alternatives, and then of course, preparing the draft and final feasibility study report. That's all the feasibility study work. Lastly, we've got, we've got the community involvement assistance. We need the help of the consultant to assist us with meetings and responses to community comments that we might receive during this process. Also then, as I mentioned, to prepare the interim remedial action plan and the responses to both agency and stakeholder comments. And then project administration and meetings would be the last task. So when you total them all up, we're just over $500,000 for this work. It's a little more than we estimated when we put our budget together for the fiscal year. Actually, a fair amount more. I think we budgeted $360,000 as an estimate. But based on our experience with the RI report, we believe we're going to have quite a few comments that we're going to be responding to. This is technical, complicated stuff that we're doing, and we have a lot of different perspectives from different agencies and different staff at the different agencies, as well as stakeholders. And so we're expecting a robust back and forth comment and response to comment process as we move forward. So that's part of the reason why we have a higher cost estimate. So with that, I'm recommending that the board approve an issuance of a professional services agreement to Engineering Analytics in an amount not to exceed $507,000 and change to provide NCP, that's National Contingency Plan Consulting Services, for the South Basin project. I'm happy to answer any questions.
I'm not seeing any raised hands. Are there any questions?
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Okay.
So RWD Production Well 3 is something that Roy, you and I have talked about quite a bit.
Yes.
What's different today that say that was different in a conversation maybe a year or two or three years ago?
I would say the concentrations are lower than they were several years ago. I mean, we were seeing some of the compounds over the MCL. Now, this is a well that blends with 17 other production wells in the Dyer Road well field. So it's important to note that even when the well was operating, which it mostly has not been operating over the last several years, it was being blended, and the concentrations going into the potable system were essentially non-detect, is my understanding. So IRWD has the benefit of blending in this case. But in terms of changes, other than the concentrations going down or being lower in the well, we don't know exactly why, but we're certainly not complaining. And
Okay. Yeah,
that's about it. They have IRWD has occasionally been using the well. They had essentially turned it off most of the time for quite a few years, but I think a couple of years ago they turned the well back on and did use it a fair amount.
So my recollection was the well was turned off, and how long had it been turned back on that you just now referenced?
I would say for approximately a year they had it turned on. Now, I think it's, again, not been used in the last year very much. That's my recollection. But they did turn it on for a year or so, approximately. I think they had done some rehabilitation work on it. And I think they wanted to make sure that the well was operating properly from a mechanical operational standpoint. And so I think they want to make sure their rehabilitation was successful.
Of the 17 wells that you referenced are in that area, how many of those are operating?
All of the wells are operating, to my knowledge, or at least operable. IRWD
that's a big difference, Roy, because I mean, most of them, my understanding is, are not operating. So operable or operating are very different. So please, yeah. How many of them are operating?
Well, I guess I would have to go look and see how many of the 18 IRWD Dyer Road wells are operating at this time. I cannot tell you for sure how many of those are running right now.
Okay, because you mentioned that those contribute, that there's a multi-production well joint contribution to the plume. So I believe you said that earlier, so that's why I'm wondering. You know, I think this is a closed session conversation, so I'm going to wait. I have more questions, but I'm going to hold off on those until, or I'll contact you directly. But sure. So in summary, we were getting hits. Those hits exceeded the MCL levels, and now the testing that you're getting does not exceed.
That's correct. There are detections which tells us that the contaminants are still finding their way into the drinking water aquifer, so that's still a concern. And I will mention, I move back to the map showing where IRWD well 3 is. You can hopefully see it right there, kind of mostly in the middle of the map there. And there right. are just to the left of that, three other IRWD wells shown, just to give you a perspective of where the other drinking water wells are. We also have a Santa Ana well to the north that would be up gradient. To my knowledge, that Santa Ana well has not had any detections of these constituents. But I will say, this is important, that IRWD 5, that I'm pointing to right there, just to the west of IRWD 3 and IRWD 2, have had trace level detections also of the of certain VOCs. So again, below MCL, but we're seeing trace levels in those wells. And these are in the very deep principal aquifer that we would not normally expect to see these constituents occurring in. So all the more reason staff believes that it should be an objective to try to keep that shallow plume from spreading and to begin to shrink it.
Thank you. Okay. I'll follow up. Thank you, Roy.
Up above, I have a hand raised, but I don't see who it is.
Chairman Green, this is Kelly Rowe.
Yes.
I just want to make a comment. I think that the IRWD wells, I'm just happy that they're still surviving after 40 years. When my wife first put them in, working for IRWD, I would expect that some of the wells may not be operating just because they're old, or some of the pumps may not be working. They haven't gotten to it. So I just thought I'd take that, you know, that point into consideration in your discussions.
Okay.
Mayor Green, I believe Director Doug Reinhardt has his hand up, and also Pierre Swan now.
Okay, I can't see them. Okay, Doug? Can we unmute Doug?
Okay, she unmuted me. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to answer Director Sheldon's question, the wells in IRWD's the well field out there, the ones that operate vary from week to week. But last week, we do a weekly report. Last week, Dyer Road well fields 2, 4, 6, 7, 10, 11, 12, 13, 17, and 18 were operating. And next week, it could vary. So, but well 2 was on last week. The other question I guess I had for Roy is, Roy, this switch of staff sometimes results in a lawsuit between the two organizations. I don't know what the situation is here, but it wouldn't involve OCWD, but it could tie up the people or something. Do you know any of the situation there?
I've heard nothing to that effect. I have had experience, not directly, but aware of when staff leaves, certain issues can arise. I'm not aware of any legal issues at this time between the staff, moving, transitioning from firm to firm.
Thank you.
Hey, Pierre?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, I was going to reiterate what Doug was saying, that the wells are rotated on a regular basis, and contrary to the earlier comment, we have been maintaining them, redeveloping, re-equipping the wells on a regular basis. So during peak demands, you know, we use as many of them as we can. In addition, Roy will probably tell you that IRWD has drilled a couple of other wells on the other side of the 55 freeway that also have seen contamination. So, but they are not currently operating wells, but they could be in the future in that they are across the 55 and outside the Dyer Road well field. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Do I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I just like to comment. It's my recollection, and Roy helped me in my memory, but there was a time when quite a few of those IRWD production wells were not operating. Is that correct?
I'm not sure what you might be referring to, Director Sheldon. I know there were times when the IRWD and other producers would participate in like an in-lieu program and things like that, where they might turn their wells off. But I'm not sure if that's what you're talking about.
And
I'm,
you know, I'll have to refresh my memory with John Kennedy or something. I remember receiving maps of indicating that a lot of those production wells were not operating. I don't know what a lot is, but we'll just go there. And there's a lot of history on here that would be good to refresh our memory as we take a look at this new process to go forward. So
sure.
That's okay. Thank you.
Steve, it's Pierre. Hey, the way we used to operate the Dyer Road well field is, you know, the wells would be toned down in the winter time and we would peak off them during the summertime. That was the basic operation. So most of the water we took was during the summer, at which time all the wells were, that we could, were operating. In the winter, we took less water. And that was done in order to reduce the peaking factor that applied to Orange County. Matt has changed the way that's calculated, and we have, by agreement, changed the way we operate the wells so that more water is being taken all the time from those wells, and they're rotated on a regular basis. The capacity of the well field, which you might be referring to, is 80 CFS, supposedly, and we don't necessarily operate it at 80 CFS very much of the time, but that doesn't mean we've shut any of the wells down other than essentially well number three. Hope that helps.
Pierre, why was well number three turned back? Thank you, Pierre. Why was the well number three turned back on for a year?
I'm not aware. You'd have to ask Doug. That's more in his committee than mine.
Yeah, Director Sheldon?
Yeah, why was it turned on and then turned off?
Well, I think it was turned off when we started detecting.
Right.
But then we turned it back on because we could blend it. But like Director Swan said, we alternate all those wells. The only one that has been off for any extended length of time, and I'd have to go back and look at how long it was for IRW3, is one, and that's a whole different situation, which has since, should I say, been resolved favorably with the PFAS situation. I think, as Director Swan said, we have the capability to pump far in excess in any one period of time. We just have a limitation as to the amount we can pump over a year's period.
Thank you.
Okay, I don't see any more raised hands. Do we have a motion?
So moved by Brandman.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay.
Director Green.
Yes.
Director Zara?
Yes.
Director Brandman?
Aye.
Director Ta?
Yes.
Director Sheldon?
Yes.
That motion carries with 5 yes votes.
Okay. Moving on to the update on the final expansion construction.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman. Sandy Scott Roberts will give the committee an update this morning. Sandy, we have no audio.
Sandy, we can't hear you. We still can't hear you. Bruce, can you help us?
Director Green, it's really on Sandy's end here. She's able to share her presentation. She's on as a, yeah.
Okay, there she goes, her microphone. So just unmute yourself, Sandy.
Well, so I was on the call and now I'm on computer audio. For some reason, my phone was unmuting. Not unmuting myself. I tried the star six, it was not working. All right, so I'm glad you can hear me. I'm on my computer audio. Hopefully it all works well. But yes, I'll give a quick update since we are in our eighth month now of the construction of the final expansion. So a little bit of show and tell of what's going on here. Okay. So we, as part of the final expansion, the advanced water treatment facility is being expanded. In particular, you see the yellow box with the red outline, that's the microfiltration west basement. So that's what's being expanded to add the 1.5 new trains. So we've dewatered the site, shored it, put shoring up, we've excavated the dirt, and now the next phase is to begin putting the foundation piles. There's some activity occurring on the south end of the site, but right now that's for the connection of the new pipeline that's going to bring the water from plant two to GWRS. But for right now, that's only dewatering wells. So not much exciting stuff to look at down there. So I'm going to show you some pictures of the MF West. So here we are, you can see the admin building there in the back, and here's the microfiltration west. You can see on the right-hand side there, there's microfiltration east, and that's the fully expanded version. So we're just mimicking that. So there's the big hole 30 feet deep that's been dug, excavated, and filled with gravel to begin the pile operation. This is the filling of the gravel of that site. So they had operations equipment inside, getting the gravel, 2 feet of gravel at the bottom of the base of the microfiltration basement. After the gravel was put in, the drill rigs had to be lowered down into the MF hole in order to start the pile work, installing the piles. And they're auger cast piles, so they're not driven piles, pile driving. Which does help with noise and vibrations. Less noise, less vibration. Here's another picture closer up of one of the drill rigs floating over the MF floor as it's being lowered down into the hole for the microfiltration. This is a picture of one of the test piles that is being drilled. So you can see the blue rig is actually just beginning the pile drilling. They're 18 inch diameter piles and they're going down between 30 and 60 feet. And then concrete is poured, cement and concrete is poured into the drilled hole. And then you can see the rebar cage that's being suspended there. That is then at the very end also pushed through into the piles. These test piles were tested for their strength, and it's going to take 28 days to get a result. And if the strength meets our criteria, then they're going to continue on and drill over 280 piles underneath the microfiltration basement. At plant two, construction is also underway. Now, this is for the conveyance facilities. You can see here the green facilities show our facilities. We've got the two circular flow equalization tanks and a pump station. And then there's a pipeline that's just adjacent to the Santa Ana River that's going to be rehabilitated. Construction has not started on that yet to bring the water to GWRS. So for the tanks and the pump station, we've also installed the shoring, excavated the dirt, not nearly as deep because the tanks are only buried 4 feet. It's not a subsurface basement like the microfiltration. And so there's not as deep of a hole, but we are doing a different kind of foundation than piles. We're doing cementitious deep soil mixing, or CDSM. And I'll show you some pictures of that. So here's the overview site of plant two. Yes, you can see the Santa Ana River on the right there. Now you can see all the equipment that is out there. Keller is the subcontractor to Shimmick, who is doing all the deep soil mixing. So you can see the rigs there in the back, also similar to the piles. There's one rig that first drills and loosens and takes some soil out. And then the other rig actually starts putting the cementitious material in and mixes it in with the sand to create columns versus piles. So the piles at MF were 18 inches in diameter. The columns for the deep soil mixing here at plant two are 8 foot in diameter. And there's over 500 of them that go underneath the tanks. And the reason for this difference is just a sandier soil at plant two. There's a faults, there's seismic faults, and to prevent liquefaction and any kind of issues with the seismic faults, this was the foundation required for this site. So here you can see the rigs that are doing the deep soil mixing, the two yellow ones. The blue one is actually the one that's drilling out the soil, the native soil, and pre-drilling the holes for the deep soil mixing rigs. Here's a closer picture. That's the, the blades that are being used to put that cementitious material into the hole. And the cement material goes up through these hoses and into that column and then gets sprayed out as it's rotating and drilling down. These columns are going about 55 feet deep from about 4 feet deep, which is where, below grade, which is where the tank bottoms will be located. And the picture at the bottom there is the batch plant. There's the delivery truck that you see there is delivering dry cement into those two silos. And it's being mixed on site so that there's a continuous supply of this cementitious material for the deep soil mixing. Similar to the piles, these are being tested for their strength to ensure that they're meeting our specifications. So those are the pictures, just overview. The final expansion part were construction. We're about 14% complete based on expenditures. The pipeline rehabilitation portion, the slip line project that's currently out to bid, we're gonna be opening the bids June 16th. We'll be bringing that to the board for the consideration in July. The pump station and flow EQ tanks is also 14% complete. And then one other project as part of the total final expansion project, or one other component, is the OCSD headworks modification at plant two. And that has just begun construction. They're in the very early stages. All these projects are scheduled to be complete by February of 2023. That concludes my update. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Director Shelton.
Thank you. Sure. Hi, we're 14% complete. Have we had any change orders or
need to tap into our contingency?
We have had change orders. We do not need to tap into our contingency. We actually, we benefited tremendously by competitively bidding our microfiltration system, the membranes, and we had a drastic reduction in the cost for the microfiltration membranes as compared to past projects. And so with that savings, we are still, we're actually in a credit right now for change orders. So we're at about a $7 million credit.
So we did a credit that was above the contract, contract price?
The credit, yes. No, not above the contract price. The total contract price was $199 million.
I'm referring to the contract price that would be subject to the that would be related to the credit. Like, how did we get a credit? It came in less over budget, is what you're saying.
So what we did is, since we were still testing the microfilters, the Sinor and the Evoqua, we were still testing them side by side. The way we decided to not delay the project because of that is we entered in a line item of an estimated cost for the microfilters. And so that estimated cost was, every contractor had to put that same amount in. So that $19 million, that was our estimated cost. It actually came in at closer to $11
million. So we've had a savings.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, I took a credit, like what contractor had given us a credit.
Savings. Sorry, a savings.
And my other, thank you for the information. Could you add changes in contract and, you know, to add our contingency when you do your updates? That'd be great to see that.
Sure.
Thanks.
Yep. I don't see any other hands raised. Okay, this was an informational item. Thank you, Sandy. Good report. Okay, next, do we have any director's comments? Oh, first, let's put everything on consent calendar.
Okay.
Does that work? Okay, Christina. And then, do we have any director's comments?
Yes, I had raised my hand.
Got it.
Madam Chair, is Roy still available?
Yes, I'm here.
Roy, you said there is DTECs in Production Well 3. What level were those DTECs compared to the MCL?
My recollection is that they were less than a part per billion for where the MCL would be, say, 5 or 6 parts per billion. So that's the relative difference.
So a fifth or a sixth of the MCL.
Correct.
And if IRWD is comfortable operating Production Well 3 and providing that water to its customers, why are we spending resources to address this problem? It doesn't seem to be a problem. They're providing the water.
Dr. Sheldon, this is Mike. I think that probably is a more of a closed session item. I mean, we do know that there's regional pollution in that area. We do know that there are concentrations of contaminants that exceed the MCL by 1,000 times.
Well, let's have a closed session, but those contaminants are not within my lifespan of reaching this area. So we should have that conversation then. Thank you.
Okay, do we have any director's comments?
Chairwoman Green, this is Roger Yeo. Yeah, sorry, I was having difficulty trying to figure out how to raise my hand. I think my daughter knows how to use this better than I do. I was gonna comment on Sandy's, one of the slides. In addition to showing the percentage completed, can we also show the time elapsed for future reports, yes. That is.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
I can show both, yes.
Okay. General Manager?
I have nothing to report.
Okay, we're adjourned. Talk to everybody tomorrow.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.